We hope you enjoyed listening to the Toledo, Ohio. Enthusiast, Denver, Colorado.
Science communicator.
Welcome to CyberSquid Radio, an up-and-coming podcast where we discuss the latest science news and science-related pop culture we think matters most to you. I'm Jeff Stevenson, a science communicator based here in Toledo, Ohio.
I'm Logan Shear, a chef and science enthusiast based out of Denver, Colorado.
And I'm Stephanie Lowe, a fellow science enthusiast and host of the Dope Science Show based out of Oceanside, California.
Today, we'll be getting hyped up about the Great American Eclipse. This is the celestial event of the year, so how can we not talk about it?
What myths surround the solar eclipse?
Can I see it from my house?
How often does this happen?
All that and more on this week's episode of CyberSquid Radio.
This is an important part of the process,
yeah,
I guess.
This is all method acting.
I know what you mean when you say you can't explain. I know you got it wrong. That's the way you play the game. I'm not gonna stop you, and I promise not to rob you.
Solar eclipses have been occurring for as long as Earth has had a moon. Not until relatively recently, though, have people fully understood the mechanics behind this celestial spectacle. Jeff's going to start us out today by taking us on a tour of exactly what's happening when the sun is eaten by the moon.
Yeah, it's a very, very cool experience. And I think most people are familiar with the concept of an eclipse and shadows casting over one another. But I figured I'd just do a quick little intro on it. And the best way I can think about doing this is if we use some body props here. So imagine your head is the Earth.
Done.
And, you know, your eyes are somebody standing on the Earth looking off of it. And I want you to hold your thumb out in front of you. So your thumbnail is going to be the moon. Hold it at like arm's length. And I assume some of you are driving or walking or doing the dishes. Try to find like a street
light. We want you to be as distracted as possible.
Please. I want you to focus on this science bit rather than the road. Please do this for me. I want all of our listeners to be doing this simultaneously. And at arm's length, just kind of use your thumbnail to cover up a light source in the distance. That light source is going to be our mock sun. And just wave it in front of you until it covers it up. That right there, the moment, is the totality of a solar eclipse, when your thumbnail completely covers that light source. Now, if you were to continue your thumb all the way around to the back of your head, and the back of your head is night, right, because it's nighttime where the sun is not shining. And
thank you, Jeff.
What's going to happen then? Yeah, nailed it. What's going to happen then is the shadow from that light source hitting your head is going to cast a shadow on your thumbnail, the moon. And that's going to be a lunar eclipse. So if it's in front of you, it's a solar eclipse. If it's behind you, it's a lunar eclipse. And they happen on average about every 18 months.
Okay. All right.
I saw that. That's a really good way to explain it, because someone asked me, a little girl asked me after I've been cramming and I thought I understood what a solar eclipse was. She said, "So what's a solar eclipse?" And I was still like stumbling. I'm like, and that really makes it easy, you know, like, hey, if the sun, what did you say? If the sun is behind you, that shadow is behind you, then it's a lunar?
Yes, it's a lunar eclipse. So if the shadow of your head, which is the Earth's shadow, is casting on your thumbnail or the moon, then that's a lunar eclipse. If it's in front of you and that moon thumb is blocking a light, solar eclipse.
I was reading that if we're really lucky, extremely lucky, you can get 5 solar eclipses in a year, but it's only happened 25 years out of the last 5,000 years. And the last I know, right? And the last one was 1935, and the next one is in 2206.
Oh, okay. So, well, I'll be alive by then.
Right, so that's what we're shooting
transfer
for.
Transfer my head to a jar.
Yeah. Exactly.
Once a singularity happens, we'll all observe it.
Right, we can experience it.
Well, the better question is, though, is in our perfect model example, they should happen every month, right? There should be like 12 lunar eclipses and 12 solar eclipses, but there's actually not, because the moon does not orbit in this perfect plane that always crosses the light source directly behind you and directly ahead of you. It's actually on a 5-degree tilt, which causes it to be a little bit more rare to actually have these hit, but it has to cross the plane twice that the sun is in. So at 2 points, it does have to be in these pathways, and then there's a chance of a eclipse occurring at those points. So that 5-degree tilt makes it a rare thing.
That makes sense.
Or rarer. That means that they don't all occur right there on the equator of the Earth.
Yeah, and then the big reason why the solar eclipses are so much harder to see is for that lunar eclipse that's behind you, you just have to be somewhere on the dark side of the Earth to see a lunar eclipse. The shadow is huge. The shadow is going over the entire moon. So you just have to be somewhere on that half of the Earth. With the solar eclipse, with your thumb ahead of you, that shadow is super narrow, and you have to be at an exact spot on Earth at the just the right time. So it's not that one is really more rare than the other. It's that one is just, there's not as many opportunities for humans to see them. Sometimes they just occur like over the Pacific Ocean and no one really sees them.
I was going to say, I read that it can happen anywhere on Earth, or should happen at least any spot on Earth at one time in the existence of Earth. Every 400 years, there should be, like, maybe San Diego will get it, you know, another 400 years. So it, because it's like inevitable, it's just a time thing.
Yeah, it's super complicated to figure out the pathings of all this stuff too. And maps don't do it a good justice because maps are all flat and it's difficult to get a good idea of how these paths actually work on a two spherical basis.
Right, because you're taking like a Mercator projection and putting orbits all around it.
Yeah, I was,
which is just confusing in the first place.
I'm actually planning a camping trip out to be in the totality point, the best point to see it in the country. And I was trying to explain to the person I'm going with, like, oh, you can't look at the map this way. You have to make a perpendicular line to the pathway to get the same universal time. It's just like, it's very complicated to figure out exactly where you need to be at what time. Luckily, there's lots of online resources that just tell you, but we were trying to figure it out because we're huge nerds, you know, that we were just trying to mess around with the science a little.
A camping trip that I might add, I was not invited along on, but I will be crashing.
Yeah, Logan is apparently also coming on a trip that I've been planning with, like, my girlfriend.
That's
like
awesome.
A romantic solar eclipse weekend with my girlfriend. And I've
and
only
Stephanie,
paid.
You're more than welcome.
Yeah, apparently everyone's just welcome on my solar eclipse trip. So, you know, should be
Jeff,
should be a great time.
Eclipse.
You know, it's funny you said that because I was thinking, I was like, what eclipse stories do I have? The last eclipse was like a lunar eclipse a couple years ago, I think. And I was texting someone that I was into and I was like trying to like impress him with my smart skills about the eclipse.
Naturally.
And I was like,
go.
Ooh, isn't this romantic?
That's never gone wrong.
It was so romantic. We were looking at this together on our phones virtually. But, you know, a lot of people are going to get engaged. I'm not saying that you're going to pop the question, but you never know. Maybe people shouldn't.
Oh, no, don't. Uh-oh. Please don't say this. She listens
Uh-oh.
To the podcast.
I think Stephanie's got you figured out, Jeff.
Oh, man.
I'm just so bad.
He's not even told me. I'm his best friend.
We're going to release this episode after the podcast date. Curve expectations of what this trip. We're sleeping out of our car. This is not a romantic, like,
right,
this isn't a
right.
candlelit dinner type of thing.
Hey, I proposed to my wife in our apartment complex. It doesn't have to be romantic, man.
Stop trying to talk me into proposing during the solar eclipse.
You just got to mean it. You just got to mean it, dude.
I'm not doing this. This is not part of the podcast.
All right. Anyways, back to solar eclipses. So, Jeff, you described for us the difference between a lunar eclipse
yeah.
and a solar eclipse, which is basically the order of the three celestial bodies that it takes to make an eclipse, being the sun, the earth, and the moon, just in various orders. Sometimes the moon is between the sun and the earth, and sometimes the earth is between the moon and the sun, making a lunar eclipse. What exactly are you going to see if you are inside the path of totality, which is where the sun is going to completely eclipse the sun?
Astronomers talk about the solar eclipse in four phases: C1, C2, C3, and C4. Astronomers are very good at naming things, right?
Obviously.
And C1 is the instant the lunar disk touches the solar disk in the sky. So that's just right when the eclipse is about to start, right when you're like, what is going on here? Something's happening.
Right as contact.
Yes. And then C2 is the exact second the lunar disk completely covers the sun. So the exact moment of totality. And then totality, like I you know, was saying, it can last from 30 seconds to 2.5 minutes, depending on how close you are to the center. And C3 is the moment after that where it just leaves the disk of the sun. So the moon has now just moved off of it. And then C4.
So that's where you're going to see Bailey's beads.
Yes.
Is in C3.
Yep, right before C2 and right after C3. Right then, right at the C2, C3 range. And the final moment as it's finishing its coverage of the sun is when it finally leaves and everything looks 100% normal again, and that's C4. So those are the stages.
All right. So you're going to want to look out and note the passing of C1 through 4. Jeff, don't you think we should give our listeners some kind of warning about viewing the solar eclipse and what kind of glasses or goggles to use so that they don't go blind?
If you are adding random stuff in, you could like add in some crazy sound effects of like...
Yeah, that would be cute.
A bad idea.
Yes.
Safety warning. Do not use regular sunglasses to view the solar eclipse. Do not do that. You need special glasses or a welding class 14 mask. Welding mask class 14 or special certified glasses. Yep. Do not freaking use sunglasses. It's not an option.
How was that?
Those are probably fine.
But the cheap ones I got from Walmart for a dollar are okay?
Stephanie's going to be a full-time podcaster because she will have lost her vision and has to do audio only.
Because she's going to be blind.
Okay, just checking.
So most people are going to see a partial eclipse in the United States. So if you haven't made any crazy plans like I have, where you're sleeping in your car in the middle of nowhere, you're probably going to end up seeing...
Middle of nowhere being Missouri.
Yeah, Missouri, just a terrible place.
Somewhere in the flyover states.
Hey, shout out to all our Missouri listeners.
I was about to say, sorry, we love you.
Yeah, we love you. Most people are going to see a partial eclipse. Here in Ohio, I think it's at 80%, which means that the moon will not completely block out the sun. It'll only block out 80% of it. And that's still going to be really cool. But what you really want to do is you want to get as close to that center of it as possible. So in the shadow band, if you're anywhere in the band, and you can go look up maps, we'll put some in the show links, you're going to see a total eclipse. But if you're on the very edge, you'll see it for like 30 seconds, where I'm going to be almost in the exact center. I'm going to see it for about 2 to 3 minutes of complete darkness.
Crazy.
And I know, it's going to be amazing. And there's actually a few things that I'm specifically going to be looking for. So if you're lucky enough to be there at totality, there's a few things that you should look out for. If you're just seeing a partial, there's still a few more things that you want to take a look at as well. So the one I'm excited about seeing, and I probably even shouldn't start with this one because it's the craziest one, but there's a certain point and that right when the moon completely covers the sun and right when it's leaving, there's some sort of optical effect as the sun rays are going across the edge of the moon. And then on the ground, there'll be a thing created called shadow bands. They're very elusive. They don't happen during every eclipse, and you have to be very lucky. But what it'll look like is a bunch of horizontal shadow lines around you, and they'll all be wiggling like snakes. So if you can imagine just your entire plane of ground around you, everywhere you can see shadow snakes. That's what I like to call them.
But I call them skull crawlers.
Why?
Because it sounds neat.
A shadow, and they just wiggle around. You can find videos of these on YouTube, and it seems super creepy, but it only happens for a few moments and not during every eclipse. But if you are trying to see them, you want to lay down like a big white bed sheet or get near some white concrete, and you'll have a much better chance to, because they're very subtle, but it's super creepy. That's the thing I'm looking out for. Another good one to look out for is right before that moment and right after, there'll be a diamond ring, which is just a really good photo opportunity if you have the right equipment to photograph the sun.
Would this be the diamond rig you're going to propose with?
No, I'm realizing this is going terrible. Like, that's the moment, right at the diamond ring. If you're proposing, I'm going to give you some advice. This is the moment you want to do it, all right? There'll be a little light peeking out from the sun as it's passing over, and it'll look like a diamond ring, basically. They'll see the outline of the sun around the moon.
Just one bright spot on the outside circle of this whole eclipse.
Yes, exactly. And also around that time, you'll be able to see something called Bailey's beads. And I don't really know who came up with this name.
This is actually, Jeff, named in the honor of Francis Bailey, who provided the exact explanation of the phenomenon in 1836. The diamond ring effect is only seen when one bead is left, creating that effect we were talking about earlier. So Francis Bailey.
So Bailey's beads. Yeah, it's going to look like there's a string of beads surrounding the moon because the moon isn't a perfect sphere. It's got crests and valleys and all kinds of different terrain. Well, isn't terrain Earth? Moraine?
Shut up.
I don't know what they call it on the moon. I don't think it's terrain. I think terrain is Terra, Earth.
Well, yeah, but...
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
It must be moraine? Moraine?
If any of you listeners out there know what a lunar landscape is called,
we'll go with that.
Please tweet us and
let us know.
Tell us.
But the light will be shining through and it looked like beads going around the moon. So those are all things that you can look for if you are in the actual totality path. Now, if you're not, what you want to keep an eye out for is at the maximum point of totality. And if you're in the path, you can actually remove your safety protective goggles and look at it directly before quickly putting them back on after a couple minutes. And but you want to look for changes around the horizon. So don't just look at the sun and the moon. Look at the horizon and how the colors have just gotten super eerie and weird. Notice the temperature change. It's going to get noticeably colder. It's going to be weird. It's going to be a weird phenomena. And the wildlife around you is actually going to take notice. You'll notice birds freaking out, or a sudden silence from wildlife around you, or maybe a pickup as the sun comes back up. Roosters have been known to, what is it that crow. Roosters do? They cock-a-doodle-do? Do they crow? Is that what it?
Yeah, they crow.
I think they cock-a-doodle-do. Yeah. But they've been known to, do that again, thinking it's a sunrise. So you want to notice wildlife. You want to notice temperature changes. You want to look at the horizon. You want to be just observing it like a scientist would, because this is going to be your only chance for
decades. There's going to be another solar eclipse that's going to be passing through a band through the Midwestern United States in 2024, which is going to have the path of totality somewhere around southern Canada.
Oh, okay. So we'll be doing solar eclipse part two.
We're going to have one now, and then in 8 years.
Well, we can maybe plan that, and you guys can invite me.
We'll plan it out.
Then Jeff won't have his secret camping trip at that time. Then. And he'll be married. Maybe we'll have kids by that point.
Yeah, that's my plan. I'm not really big on astronomy mythology, which sounds weird. I have an astronomy degree, and I care very little about mythology as far as kind of constellations and that kind of stuff goes, but... Logan, I know you're super into it. And Stephanie, I think you have a few stories that you'd like to share as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have a couple of stories. One, it's my favorite story. You guys asked me, what's my favorite story about the solar eclipse that I can find, a folk story or whatever. So I found this one. It's really cool. It comes from West Africa, the people of Togo and Benin. They see the solar and a lunar eclipse as a sign that it's time for people to settle feuds and make peace. And this is story time, so I'm going to tell you guys a story really, really quick.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so once upon a time, the sun and the moon were best friends. They were hanging out. They were always hanging out and loving each other, and they were the flyest ones in the, in the universe. And they were both so shiny, just so shiny. But one day, Sun got jealous of Moon's shine. So one day, Sun hosted a party for Moon and her family, because these are men and women, the Moon and the Sun. And during the party, in this story, the Sun is a man and the Moon is a woman. And they have their families and they have their lives, and they were, the stars of the galaxy. And the sun, during the party, let me go back to it, I'm sorry. The sun got jealous of the moonshine. So the sun said, hey, I'm going to have a party and invite Moon and her family over for a swimming race. And during the party, they said, all right, let's challenge each other. You get in, and then who has the fastest time, and then I'll get in. But it was a stormy day. So when the race started, Moon and her family jumped into the water. They did their very best, but they got beat up by the stormy water and all the rocks and debris. And when they pulled up to the riverside, they were dented and they had lost most of their shine. They were dull. And when they looked across the river and they saw the sun slyly smiling, Moon knew she had been tricked. So Moon invited them to another party. And at this party, Moon got the sun all liquored up, and they were having fun and having an adult party. And during this party, the moon told the sun, these kids, they complain. Yeah, these kids, they complain all the time. They're lazy, they're loud, they're ungrateful.
This is getting dark.
I just want to be free. Let's get rid of the kids. And Moon was like, you know what? That sounds like a good idea, because these kids be bugging. So, Moon was like, all right, I'm going to throw a picnic. And at the picnic, I'm going to kill my kids. And when you see that I've killed my kids, you can kill your kids. And then we can get together and have a party and live our lives.
Like most party conversations go.
Right. I'm assuming some drinks and libations happen and somehow
these
two connected. And so the picnic happens. The moon is tricky. So she takes her kids. They have the picnic and she puts red dye into the river. And the sun is downriver and sees the red dye and thinks that Moon has killed her kids. So the moon hurriedly murders his children and throws them in the river. And then when he's walking back to the village, he sees Moon and her family just living it up, and he realizes he's been tricked. And he swears his revenge for all time. And since then, the moon and sun have been fighting. So when you see the moon swallow the sun, we call it a solar eclipse. When the sun gets pissed, he denies his shine to the moon, and we call it a lunar eclipse.
Okay. That's a fun
story. And so... this is the story they tell the kids.
Okay.
They want people to understand that war is going to be bad for the families and kill the children. And so you should always befriend your enemies and end all feuds and wars. And when they see a solar or lunar eclipse, they take that time to talk about peace and try to reconcile.
So wait, where's this story from again?
Togo.
Right. Really?
Right? This is from Togo and Benin. It's from a community or a culture or ethnicity. I'm not sure how you say it. I could not pronounce it, you guys. That's why I didn't say it.
The Batamaliba.
It is the Batamaliba people. Batamaliba people in Togo and Benin. I thought that was a great story.
And even they use the sun be buggin', you know? Like, yeah. Wow. It's amazing what a...
That was me.
American culture has done, you know, it's really.
I mean, granted, that's a little psychotic, well, but I think it's cool that they actually incorporate the lunar and solar eclipse together in the same story to explain both of them.
Exactly. At the same time. And they take that opportunity to say, hey, we don't want to kill our children and have wars. We want to be friends. And isn't it? Most folk stories are pretty dark. You know, so it's pretty normal.
Yeah, that Grimm's is true. Fairy tales. Those are like horror stories. It ain't Disney out here.
So that was my favorite one. Did you guys have any favorite stories?
Ooh, I had a favorite one. But every sustained culture throughout history, they've witnessed a solar eclipse at some point. I mean, such an event can't be trivial to a people who mostly weren't aware the Earth was round. I mean, many cultures thought eclipses to be an evil omen of some kind. Some thought they were battles by the gods. Others believed that celestial beasts were responsible for devouring the life-giving sun. And as we saw from the story from Togo and Benin, that sometimes it has a good moral ending to it. It's used to teach a lesson. But one of my favorite stories that I ran across portrays, or this is actually a factual story, this isn't a myth of any kind, but it's talking about how lunar eclipse was used to the advantage of Christopher Columbus. Yes, that Christopher Columbus, 1492, he sailed the ocean blue. But he also had a couple of other expeditions later on, continuously funded by Spain. This one taking place in June of 1503 during an expedition in the Bahamas. Columbus's ships were beset upon by a parasite that actually chewed through the wooden hulls and ruined the ships, caused them to leak, and it made them have to leave two of the ships, consolidate his crew onto the other one. Of course, those ships being the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria, which at this point were getting rather aged, as we can see that they were infested by bugs and wood mites or whatever they were. So he was forced to put ashore on the island of Jamaica. Now, Jamaica at this time wasn't known as Jamaica. It was also inhabited by a native tribe called the Arawak. Now, when Columbus first put into port, he was helped by the Arawak. They gave them food and shelter and other supplies to try and help these poor stranded sailors. But soon they overstayed their welcome because it really wasn't a backup plan. It's like, oh, well, we don't have a ship, we're just
Jamaican
here.
Now.
We're Jamaican.
We're Jamaican now.
So
we own this.
The situation, it finally came to a head after a confrontation between Columbus's crew and the natives during a rebellion, and it resulted in a couple of casualties. The tribe marched down to the wrecked ships and demanded that the explorers leave, and that they weren't going to provide it with any more food, no more shelter, just get out. And now, Columbus was aware that a lunar eclipse was going to be occurring in about 3 days' time, and he found this knowledge from an almanac, and it was written by a German astronomer named Johannes Müller von Königsberg. I'm sure I'm butchering
that.
The most
German name ever created.
Right? Like Adolf could only top that.
Yeah. This man is the founder of German names. Everyone else before
this
him.
This guy was a highly regarded writer of this almanac, a highly regarded astronomer, because it allowed sailors at the time to kind of diverge from the typical trade routes and paths across the ocean, because then they could still navigate by the stars. And it was extremely accurate. And if you were setting out to sea in the 1500s, you had a copy of this book. And, of course, Columbus did. And he saw that 3 days' time, there was going to be a lunar eclipse. So that blood moon that we were talking about, these obviously occur at night. So after the chief of the Arawaks told him to get out, to leave, Columbus suggested that this would be very upsetting to the Christian God, and he would be angered by the tribe's refusal to provide food to his sailors. So the third day comes. Sure enough, the moon turns blood red, spelling death for the natives, and the tribe came to Columbus in a panic, begging him to restore the moon to his former self. And he did this thing where he's like, well, I guess I'm just going to go pray about it for a little bit. And this lunar eclipse was scheduled to last about 50 minutes. So he retires back into the ship, basically has an hourglass and like sets it going.
He takes a sip of brandy. Yeah,
he's just like got his feet kicked up. He's like, you know, just reading and whatever. Then he comes back out a couple of minutes before this is slated to end. And it says, I have interceded on behalf of your people to the Christian God, and now I think he will forgive you. And sure enough, the moon begins to turn back to its normal, bright, luminous self, and the tribes agree to provide food and shelter to Columbus and his crew once again. This took place on February 24th of 1504. Now, Columbus's crew was eventually rescued by a Spanish Armada ship later in June of that year, but he's just a crafty SOB for moving this
asshole.
Using it to his advantage. You know, Columbus was a bit of an asshole.
Why he did it, you know. It definitely made sense from his perspective, but...
He's literally the Donald Trump of the 1500s.
That's some
art of the deal shit right there. Like,
exactly.
Oh yeah, you know, he was actually named governor of Jamaica or governor of the Bahamas at one point, and was relieved of that duty because he was so bad at it. Like, he was just huge D-bag. Like, the dude was terrible. We should not have a Columbus Day. And Amerigo Vespucci discovered America anyways.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
So, well, you know, he's got a good PR team. He's got a good PR team.
But you got to hand it to Johann Müller von Königsberg,
the real hero of
his almanac. Yeah, the real heroic astronomer in this story.
Right. Definitely. Very, very, very interesting. And
yeah. So what are your plans to go see the solar eclipse, Steph? What are you doing?
Yeah, I don't know. But I'm going to try to make it fun. I want people to take time to just, like, really enjoy the experience. Because there's people who, this is their life, you know, they travel around the world chasing eclipses.
Right.
I have a friend whose dad, he's had the luxury of going to every single solar eclipse around the world, I think for over 20 years now, and he just goes.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like,
I've been told by or read from what astronomers have written about this thing is that you see one and you're just addicted, like you have to go see another and another.
And it gives you a reason to travel. Like, instead of just going for no reason, you actually have an event, you know, something astronomical to review. So,
Especially if you're, like, into photography. I feel like it's a really good opportunity.
Right.
Exactly. Yay! So that's what I'm doing. I don't know.
Well, great. Well, Jeff and I will be camped out in a car together.
Jeff will be
spooning.
Camped out in a car with his loving girlfriend. And
I'm going to be spooning. Jeff and his girlfriend.
I've only paid for 2 tenths, and Logan is not one of them, and 2 cars.
Fine. I got a car.
Okay.
I'm going to be interested to hear how this camping trip turns out.
Like, it's gonna be great. We're gonna send out plenty of
pictures. A little drama would be interesting.
Yep. Especially when Jeff pops a question.
We are not letting Mackenzie listen to
this. So, thank you for listening to Cyber Squid Radio this week.
No, but I am really excited about the eclipse. I mean, I'm excited enough that I'm, you know, driving 9 hours, sleeping in my car in order to see it. And I think what's really cool is that people are just geeked about this science event, which never happens, right? This is, like, such a rare thing for the whole country to be geeked about something so sciencey. And we're really kind of fortunate because if you think about it, there's no real reason why the moon has to perfectly cover the sun. The sun is about 400 times larger than the moon, and it also happens to be about 400 times further away. So they perfectly cover each other up. It's this cosmic coincidence.
This crazy coincidence.
That there's, I mean, I'm not a big believer in anything supernatural, but that's weird. Okay, yeah. That's a weird thing that humans are alive to witness this, like, beautiful coincidence in the universe, and that we get to actually, like, appreciate it and understand what's going on this cosmic level. And it's only going to be for a little while because the moon's getting further and further away from the Earth as it orbits, and so there won't be any total solar eclipses at a certain point. So
like an inch and a half every year. Yeah, the moon gets like an inch and a half further away every year.
Eventually, there will be only partial eclipses. So it's this crazy unique thing, and everyone's just so geeked about it. Aren't you guys geeked about it? Like,
I'm totally geeked about it.
We hope that you take the time to experience this once-in-a-lifetime event. Thank you, Steph, for coming on the show and helping us dissect the Great American Solar Eclipse.
Thank you guys for having me on the show. This is Stephanie, a.k.a. Science Steph with Steph from The Dope Science Show. And I'm going to keep talking about the solar eclipse every day, all the way up to the day. And then, I don't know, I think I'm going to have to watch it with you guys. But thank you guys for listening. And, yeah.
All right, well, send us your photos of the eclipse when it happens. Tweet to us using your favorite moments. We're on Twitter at Cybersquid Radio. Please follow Steph on Twitter at The Dope Science Show. We'll see you here next time on Cybersquid Radio.
Exactly, that's what I was doing.
I don't think we ever even actually sing the actual tune of the song either.
We just kind of do like a weird bass line.
One wrong move, you're crucified by an emperor with no clue.